Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.
Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Kristen.
And today marks the final episode in our four-part STEM series looking at women in the fields of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Yes, it's math day here on Stuff Mom Never Told You. And as we've been doing with the other STEM conversations we've been having, let's first look a little bit at history. Because for math in particular, it goes back quite a ways, all the way to ancient Alexandria with Hypatia, who's one of the earliest and certainly best known female mathematicians.
Yeah, her dad, Theon, was one of the last members of the Library of Alexandria, and she followed in his footsteps studying math and astronomy. She didn't actually have a happy ending, though.
Yeah, she was eventually beaten to death with roofing tiles by an angry mob of religious zealots. But thankfully, things have improved. I mean, we should say, though, that Hypatia was so notable for the work and the scholarship that she was doing at the time. And I don't think it was that she was a woman studying math and astronomy that got her killed by an angry religious mob, but more the fact that she was an academic. And academia was a bit at odds with, obviously, religious zealotry.
Indeed. Well, moving forward, we have Winifred Edgerton Merrill. She was the first American woman awarded a PhD in math from Columbia University. But this was not as recent as you might think. This was in 1886.
Yeah, the board of Columbia initially denied her request to pursue a PhD, of course, but in her obituary, it was funny how math was described as a quote-unquote masculine pursuit of hers. And even though she had to overcome that initial obstacle at Columbia, she did gain a lot of notoriety at the time. She was very well respected in her day.
And important to our conversation about women and diversity is Euphemia Lofton Haynes, who's the first African-American woman to earn a PhD in math in 1943 from Catholic University. And by that time, many black women were earning masters in math.
But if you think about it, though, we have Merrill earning that first PhD in 1886, and it's not until 1943 that we have Haynes earning the same degree. And that's something that'll come up again, where there is that gap, not just gender-wise with math, but also in terms of socioeconomic and ethnic backgrounds. But then if we want to fast forward to today, just for an example of a woman who's doing really amazing things with math, one of the 2013 MacArthur Fellows is statistician Susan Murphy, and she collects and develops methodologies to evaluate courses of treatment for people who are coping with chronic and relapsing disorders, especially things like substance abuse and depression. And she wanted to have an impact on real life, kind of like what we were talking about in the engineering episode. She really sees an altruistic way to use statistics to improve people's lives.
Man, I took statistics in college, my freshman year, and that was different from the other things that I enjoyed doing.
Yeah, I took a statistics course as well. It was the one math class I was required to take in college as a journalism major, and it was a summer statistics course. Students would show up in their swimsuits. They were basically on a pool break to come to class. And yeah, the imperative to save lives, I'll say, in that basic statistics course wasn't there.
Yeah.
But it was still neat to learn those things. But what Murphy does, she calls them just-in-time adaptive interventions.
Hmm.
We were not learning that in my statistics course. But I will say, though, that what she does is a neat application of how math also intersects with psychiatry, mm-hmm. mental health, and also social programs.
Absolutely. Well, so speaking of those different avenues for pursuing a career, let's look at some of the fields that math majors enter. Those can include teaching, finance, and economics. Or, you know, like Murphy, you can be a statistician.
Yeah, there's also actuarial science, which is analyzing statistics to calculate the probabilities of things like disability, unemployment, etc. And there's also computer science that goes along with it, operations research, cryptography, which is neat, budget and analyses, ecology, and if you go into a math specialty, probably outside of just basic teaching, you can earn a decent income for sure.
Yeah, the math specialist's median income comes to $74,350. That was in 2010, with growth expected in that sector. And so it makes me sad that I, you know, when I was in high school, I looked my math teacher in the face and I was like, I am never taking any more math.
I feel like throughout this entire STEM series, Caroline, you and I, both with our liberal arts background, both as journalism majors in college, have spent some reflective times thinking about what could have been if those scientific mathematics seeds had maybe been planted and watered a little more diligently back in the day. But if we look, though, at the math pipeline, of all of the letters in the STEM alphabet, the M is doing the best.
Yeah. Women earn 43% of the math and statistics bachelor's degrees, but they make up just 27% of math PhDs. So there's that pipeline theory again, that you're losing women as they get older and go through the educational system.
Yeah. And similarly, women comprise only 26% of the computer science and math profession workforce. So kind of like with the situation for engineering, plenty of bachelor's degrees, but then there's that major drop off once you get into the real world. And unfortunately, in real world terms, new census data shows that 26% is a drop from a 34% high in 1990.
I wonder what happened. Mathematician people, can you tell us?
Maybe we need some actuarial scientists to maybe dig through these stats for us.
Exactly. But if you look just at mathematics careers, women's participation is actually up to 47% from just 15% in 1970. So that's good.
Yeah. So maybe that computer science gender gap is pulling down that overall statistic. But one of the most persistent stereotypes that is talked about when it comes to engaging girls in STEM is this idea that girls aren't good at math. And so even though there are a lot of women who are pursuing these degrees, there is still this debate that circles back around to this basic question of whether or not our brains are as good with numbers compared to with words.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole bunch of hooey. Although I say that, and then I'm going to admit that I have been terrible at math my entire life. I had tutors forever. It never really clicked with me.
But that's so in the same way that you have a guy who can say the same thing.
Sure.
Who might be more of a word person. Thankfully, you and I don't have to represent the entire population, but when you average everything out and look at all of girls versus all of boys, you see those generalizations, those assumed gender differences start to disappear. And Elizabeth Spelke is someone who we brought up in our first conversation on women in science. And she is a Harvard psychologist and studies a lot about cognitive development in babies. And she performed a meta-analysis which found that babies as young as 6 months perform equally well on adding and subtracting. Yes, that's right. Infants can do their own very rudimentary forms of addition and subtraction. And from those earliest stages, Spelke says, no difference between the male baby brain and the female baby brain.
So, you know, we have these infants doing all of that crazy infant math.
Yes.
Which is crazy time for me. I think that's interesting. That's really
and adorable.
And adorable. I wonder what they're adding. Like, how many milk bottles? I don't know why they have a high-pitched voice. Anyway, so boys and girls do perform equally well in math until they start getting higher up in school, basically around puberty time.
Yeah, there are differences that emerge. For instance, girls tend to be better at computation, whereas boys tend to be better at problem solving. But when researchers look at what's going on outside of school, they think that perhaps these gender differences in our extracurricular activities might simply be socializing and preparing boys better for math fields.
Right. And so boys were more likely to participate in STEM-related activities, conduct at-home science experiments, and spend time on the computer and own a calculator. I only recently, P.S., got rid of my TI-85. Don't let my parents hear this podcast. Whereas girls spent more time on math homework itself.
And that, again, that's that pattern that we see over and over and over again in all of these disciplines, is girls are very diligent with their schoolwork.
Right.
We're very good at making the grade, at studying, at sitting down and doing these things, whereas boys might just be more actively engaged with it on more of a comprehensive level. For instance, the percentage of girls taking pre-calculus / analysis at 37% was higher, actually, than the percentage of high school guys at 34% who were taking those same classes.
Right, and the same trend holds true for the percent of girls taking Algebra 2, which was 78% compared to guys' 74%, but an equal percentage of males and females in high school took calculus at 17%.
Yeah, and a side note, and I'm not entirely sure how this necessarily relates directly to the gender gap, but there was one finding that girls who take calculus are 3 times more likely to study math in college. So, not entirely sure, but I thought that was kind of interesting.
It's like an interesting predictor.
But when you look at the performance overall of boys and girls on math exams, it's usually, you know, a bell curve where you have the best and the brightest and then the not so great at math on the other end. And you have more boys populated on either end of that math bell curve. So you have a lot of guys, more guys, in fact, who are really, 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 really good at math.
Mm-hmm.
But you have more guys than girls who are really, 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 really not so good at math.
Hmm.
So they're thinking that high end of the bell curve with that pocket of math savants are skewing our perception to say that, oh, well, guys are just better than math at math. Whereas it's like, no, actually, guys are just more spread out. They have more of the math performance extremes.
Interesting. Well, I mean, speaking of gaps, let's look at socioeconomics and ethnicity, which is a factor that you mentioned earlier, Kristen. Studies have found that white and Asian Pacific Islander students and those from higher income families post significantly higher scores than their counterparts who are Black, Hispanic, or American Indian, or who are from lower income families.
And you're going to see that reflected in the low numbers of non-white American women in math. They are earning only 5% of the bachelor's in math. And so if you want an argument for maybe some more social or environmental things that will contribute to those gaps in learning, this is that. Because if you look at those same ethnicities, if you go to different countries, you can see that nature versus nurture argument being won fully in favor of nurture.
Absolutely. And one example of this is Asian American students. It's a cultural thing. And if you even think back to our Tiger Mom episode that we did, when a culture and or a family unit individually emphasizes the importance of education, of whatever subject or education in general, you see better performance. So speaking of nature versus nurture, UZ from the University of Michigan told the New York Times that there is good survey data showing that this disbelief in innate ability and the conviction that math achievement can be improved through practice is a tremendous cultural asset in Asian society and among Asian Americans.
Yeah, and he was talking about how if you perform poorly in math, guess what? Your parents are simply going to push you to perform better because they have more of a growth mindset, thinking that, oh, that math isn't just some innate ability that you are born with by virtue of your X or Y chromosomes, but rather something that you can learn and adapt. And side note, Icelandic girls, do we have any Icelandic listeners? Girls in your nation are apparently math geniuses, yeah. And they're not entirely sure why. But when they were looking at global math exam numbers, Icelandic girls outperforming.
That is interesting. I wonder if that has to do with, you know, maybe different gender roles.
Yeah, because when you move to Scandinavia, a lot of times you have places like Norway, Iceland, Sweden that always consistently rank as being the most female friendly.
Yeah.
Or female friendliest, I should say. Is that grammatically correct? But in Iceland, in Japan, all around the world, girls' anxieties about being good enough in math do hold steady from country to country. In other words, even though Icelandic girls, for instance, are performing really well, they will report higher concerns about, well, maybe they're not good enough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that does make me, speaking of self-reflection through this STEM series, that does make me think back to my math experiences. And there was such a, well, not that my family was like, you know, they were slave drivers or anything, locking me in the basement until I did my math homework. But, you know, there was this push to get really, really good grades. And so I'm wondering now, you know, I'm having a moment, Kristen. Like, I'm wondering now if, you know, maybe my grades were just in math, you know, like I would have been a C student or something, but I had to get that high B or that A.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I wasn't actually as bad at math.
Probably not. Probably not. Well, and we're going to get into that issue of self-assessment and talking about what is keeping us from really closing up this math gender gap and really debunking that stereotype that girls are bad at math, that we're just naturally not as good at it, that we're going to have to study above and beyond in order to succeed right when we come back from a quick break.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
So right before the break, we were talking about confidence in math and self-assessment, and we're going to look at a few different aspects of what keeps women and girls from progressing in their mathematical studies. And a lot of this is coming from the great report, Why So Few? Women in Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math, which was created for the American Association of University Women. And so one of these cultural factors limiting girls' interest in math is that whole self-assessment issue like I was just talking about. You know, maybe I was a little bit better at math than I thought I was, but because I needed that A, I thought I kind of stunk at math. And so Kimberly Showman, who's a UC Davis sociologist, found that girls whose math test scores are at the top are less likely than boys with average or good scores to pursue science and engineering careers. She found that women are more cautious about entering those fields unless they have very high scores to begin with.
Yeah, and this is a familiar theme throughout all of these STEM episodes, because on top of that, not only is there that negative self-assessment going on, but also those cultural stereotypes of where men and women belong. If we think of your prototypical mathematician, he's probably a nerdy-ish looking guy in a tweed jacket and big glasses. And people are more likely to associate math and science with men than women. And on top of that, there's that penalty. They often hold negative opinions of women in these more stereotypically masculine positions. Women are judged to be less competent than men unless they are clearly successful. But if she is, she's considered less likable. Oh my God.
It's an incredible catch-22 that female mathematicians find themselves
in. That seems like an unsolvable equation. I would like to get more math puns in this episode if possible. I'm just warning you. But when we move through the math pipeline, Stephen Cece and Wendy Williams, who are a husband and wife psychological science team in 2010, wanted to look at what was going on with the drop-off. Because we talked about how we have 43% of women earning those math-related bachelor's, but then 26%, pretty large drop, earning the PhDs, and even fewer than that actually pursuing math-related professions. And so they wanted to dig through to see what was going on. And they said, you know what, it's not necessarily sex discrimination. It's not necessarily that women are being penalized for not being as likable, for maybe wanting to assume these more stereotypically masculine roles.
Right, because, I mean, they even point out that women are slightly more likely than men to be interviewed for and be offered tenure-track jobs in math-related fields. Instead, women are choosing not to go into math-heavy fields or dropping out once they started, and a lot of that has to do with not only the roles that women play in society and that they are expected to play in the family, but also just sort of the dreams and aspirations that young girls have about what they want to be when they grow up, whether it's math-related or not.
Yeah, one example they gave was rather than a ton of girls saying they wanted to grow up and be a physicist, they usually say they would want to be something like a doctor or a veterinarian. Again, echoing that engineering episode where women are more likely than men to select a college major or a career field that has some social aspect, some altruistic impact, which being a doctor, being a veterinarian, obviously that might make more sense than being a physicist. Not to say, though, once you dig into physics and all the real world impacts, obviously there are some cool things that are happening there, but it's just not, the education isn't there from the get-go. We aren't informing girls of these choices.
Right. And CC and Williams also point out that there is another aspect at work here. And that is that among men and women with comparable math skills, women are more likely to have outstanding verbal ability. So maybe more doors are open to them if they want to pursue slightly different, sort of a tweak on a math job. And they said that guys in math have fewer options, basically, except to stick with math.
But in the cases where women do stick with math, if we're looking more into academia, women are more likely to drop out after they start a job as a professor, often because of the childcare issue, because the workload required to get tenure often does not mesh very well with the workload of caring for a child, whereas a lot of young male professors are more likely to have a stay-at-home spouse.
Yeah, the study author said that this, at the same time that a mathematician, male or female, is trying to do all of this work to pursue tenure, that also tends to fall within the same years where man or woman, you're going to want to start getting married, having kids, raising those kids. And so just because of social breakdowns and social expectations, it seems that more women in this field than men are giving up on math to dedicate themselves more to the family.
And this is the same kind of off-ramp, in quotes, that we see in pretty much any other profession, where there does seem to come a point that for a lot of women, you hit that crossroads of, am I going to have a family and dial back, or am I going to forge onward with my career? But perhaps within STEM, and specifically talking about math, it's magnified because we are still digging ourselves out of just this historical legacy of it being a very male-dominated realm, especially when we're talking about the old guard of STEM academia.
Right. And you know, going back to what I said about women possibly dropping out of math in greater numbers to dedicate themselves more to a family or to a career that's not as demanding, I'm not in any way, you know, placing blame on the women themselves. You know, as Williams points out, universities can and should do a lot more for a woman and for those men engaged in comparably intensive caretaking. More should be done in the field itself, at the colleges and universities themselves, to make this lifestyle, this career choice more welcoming.
Yeah, and there's a generational impact of attracting more female math professors, because those women are going to serve as those visible reminders to younger female students taking those early math classes that, hey, she's doing this. Hey, I can do that. Maybe there is more female to female mentorship that can start happening. That visibility factor that we talk about again and again comes up with this as well. And then rooting even farther back from college into elementary school, it's so imperative that we break through that stereotype and the stereotype threat that girls are bad at math.
Right, because believing in the potential for intellectual growth improves scores and outcomes. Basically, believing that it is not nature that leads us to be good or bad at one thing or another.
Yeah, it's this whole issue of the growth mindset versus a fixed mindset. And girls who believe that intelligence can expand with experience and learning tend to do better on math tests specifically. And they're more likely to say they want to continue to study math in the future.
Right, because as we've talked about in our other STEM episodes, those negative stereotypes about girls' abilities lower their test performances.
So thankfully, there are prominent mentors and role models out there from the classrooms. We've had women already writing in to us saying, I teach math because I want to inspire and mentor other girls to get involved with math, which is incredible. And you can track that all the way up to higher profile examples of women like Danica McKellar, who played Winnie on The Wonder Years, who wrote a book called Math Doesn't Suck. And even though, if you're not familiar with the book, that might sound like, oh, she just wrote a book, what's the big deal? But it actually was met with a lot of critical acclaim, and I read an excerpt from it, and she does a great job of explaining what turned her on to math, and also also how math can have a direct impact on girls' day-to-day lives and why in so many ways math can make your life better.
Yeah, and other podcast shout out, she was on an episode of The Nerdist and she sounds so awesome and intelligent and great and is obviously such a great role model
yeah.
for young women.
And then there's also initiatives like the Advantage Testing Foundation's Math Prize for Girls. In 2013, for instance, 276 girls competed in the fifth annual competition. So there are definitely girls out there who are interested in math, joining these competitions.
Yeah, and I like that there seems to be this huge push from significant organizations to encourage girls in math. The Institute for Advanced Study, along with Princeton, hosts an 11-day mentoring program for undergrad, grad, and postdoc women in mathematics. So to try to close up that pipeline, caulk all those cracks in it, and keep them in there.
And also just for another example with higher education, MIT has its Women in Math Conference to celebrate students, alumni, and faculty contributions to mathematics. And there are new grants now being offered for women at the earlier phases of their math careers before we're getting into the whole tenure track issue, just starting to incentivize women to study and stick with math. And part of me wishes that this episode on math could have just been highlighting all of the lives of female mathematicians like Euphemia Lofton Hayes, the first African-American woman to earn a PhD in math in the United States, just to give as many examples as possible of, hey, no, look at what we've done. And we can do so much more.
Yeah.
But we have to, at some point, somehow, culturally uproot that idea that the lady brain just didn't cut out for all those numbers and things.
Yeah. Don't ever read the comments on the internet. When we were doing research for this, I mean, there were some great articles out there about some incredible women doing incredible things in the STEM fields. But judging by the comments, there is that huge perception that still exists, but people talk about these perceptions of women as if they are hard and true facts. Like, well, I mean, women's brains just aren't wired for these things, right?
Well, I feel like you have to look at it on an individual basis. I feel like different brains are drawn to different types of things, which is good.
Right.
It's good that we're not all mathematicians walking around, and it's good that we're not all poets walking around. You know what I
mean?
I think it's important to remember that bell curve and how we're scattered around all of its many contours, both on the more math side and more on the verbal side.
Right. And so I would encourage all of our math or STEM inclined listeners to go to our Facebook page and write your stories. We've been getting some really incredible, inspiring, encouraging stories from women. And I think it would be great if you guys just continued to post them for other women to see.
Yeah. And this is something that we would like to continue in terms of spreading the word, helping out in terms of the visibility, because obviously Caroline and I are not women in STEM, but we recognize the value of getting more women and girls engaged and also promoting the work of women who are doing incredible things already. And so this is not an initiative that we want to stop just with this podcast. So yeah, head over to our Facebook, tweet us at Mom Stuff Podcast, send us your letters, momstuff@discovery.com. We really want to hear from you and hear what's really going on outside of all these studies and statistics we've been tossing out in the past four episodes, to really learn what it's like out there for women in STEM. So with that, we are going to take a quick break and then get back to a couple of letters.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree. True love is always being excited from the first moment you see one another and every time after that. It's taking long walks together in the summer, gazing longingly into each other's eyes and, well, watching their tail wag when they chase a squirrel in the yard.
The Pedigree brand asked about believing in love at first sight. And honestly, the answer is yes. And I know you listeners know my love, Peaches Gertrude McFuzzin, whom I've talked about so much, and she really was love at first sight. But I will tell you that it took a long time for me to find her. I actually was looking for a good 2 years before I stumbled upon her picture from my local shelter and knew the moment I saw her that she was the one. And the minute I tell you when I saw that picture and I went to meet her out the shelter and I sat with her for a good 20 minutes, y'all, I couldn't leave her. I knew she had to be mine. I knew we belonged together.
Peaches and I are friends as well. We have a good relationship together. So you can find love at first sight with the Pedigree Adoption Drive June 7th to 9th, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.
And now, how about some letters?
Well, speaking of the anecdotes we've been receiving from STEM women listening, I have a letter here from Cassidy who wrote, "Thank you for your recent podcast on women in science. I wanted to drop you a line about an encounter I had with my advisor in graduate school. I have a PhD in biochemistry. A group of us had traveled to see a play about Rosalind Franklin's discovery of the structure of DNA and Watson and Crick's involvement. After the play, we were talking about James Watson's views on women and minorities in science, which are not favorable. And my advisor at the time made a comment stating that, well, he may have a point. I mean, sometimes the cells are ready at 2 a.m. I just remember staring at him in horror and saying, well, if that's the case, then I'll be there at 2 a.m. Just thought I would share. So thanks, Cassidy. PhD in biochemistry. I just raised the roof for you a little bit, Cassidy.
Okay, I have a letter here from Emily. She says, while she was listening to our STEM episodes, she was knuckle-deep in formalin, preserving tissue samples for disease and parasite analysis by histopathology. NBD. Yeah. No big deal. No big deal. All right, so Emily writes, I'm a lab tech at a marine research lab that focuses on shellfish. In my lab and in many labs I have visited, most of the actual work is done by female students and technicians of varying levels of education, BS to PhD, while the higher up men are stuck in their offices writing grant proposals. However, this seems to be changing since 2 of the 3 recently appointed professors are women. Otherwise, nearly all of my fellow lab folk are women, 2 male to 16 female. The classes and tours held at our facility are typically dominated by female students, and it seems like the majority of students at the scientific conferences I've been to have been female. I think that the gender gap will continue to close as people realize the absurdity of the idea that there are functional differences in the brains of men and women as applied to STEM aptitude. She says, thanks for spreading the word and entertaining me while you're at it. You got it, Emily, and thank you for writing in, and you get that shellfish research.
And thanks to everybody who's written in. MomStuff@discovery.com is where you can send your letters. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter @MomStuffPodcast, and you can also find us on Facebook. Messages there. Like us while you're at it. And you can also like plenty of stuff over on our Instagram, where it's Stuff Mom Never Told You, and also on Tumblr, where StuffMomNeverToldYou.tumblr.com. And if that's not enough, and surely it's not, you can also find us on YouTube. We're at YouTube.com/StuffMomNeverToldYou. with over 100 videos to watch. So get cracking and don't forget to subscribe.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
This episode is brought to you by Pedigree.
If you've been looking for love at first sight, it is closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So this June 7th to 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide.
Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more about the adoption drive and to see full terms and conditions.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.